And welcome to the Midday with Norman and Stephanie, and we have company today.
We do, and we're expecting scintillating conversation. Nothing like putting
it.
You on the spot.
So we better deliver.
Norman promised it a little earlier. Our guests are Evan Richards, and he is a board member of the Savoyards, the Madison Savoyards. Savoyards is what you prefer, isn't it?
Well, as long as you buy a ticket and come, I really will take either one, but... Yes, we, at least I tend to say Savoyards because it's named after the Savoy Theater.
Makes sense. And also here is the music director and conductor for your upcoming production, Christopher Okasek.
Pleasure being here. Thanks for having us.
Well, it's a handful. Anybody who's seen Topsy Turvy, you know, knows something of what goes into producing something as big and dynamic as a Gilbert and Sullivan show. What do you call them, operettas? That's actually the technical term, or something else?
David Crosby years ago pointed out that Gilbert and Sullivan called them operas because the production values, the music, everything that went into it was equivalent to an opera.
Demands on the singer.
Right.
It makes sense, all the costumes and the settings and stagings and... Yeah, it's a multimedia production, certainly.
Yeah, but that's an endless discussion. We have that one. Is it light opera? Is it operetta? Is it musical comedy? And the answer is probably yes, but opera kind of captures it for me, I think.
Sure, I would tend to agree as well. Sullivan started to feel a little down on himself because the whole idea of composing light opera, he said, I'm succumbing to the words too much, and he was pretty worried about that. But, you know, today it stands up as strong music, and I throw it in the category of opera or fun opera, I think maybe is a better term.
Yes, yeah, Sullivan had a long, distinguished career as a serious composer of classical music and theater music before, and as a musicologist, too, for that matter, before he ever met Gilbert.
Didn't he have a role in finding Mendelssohn pieces?
Schubert. A whole closet full of lost Schubert manuscripts. Mm-hmm, yes. Rosamunde in particular was what he was looking for. That's right, he and Sir Charles Grove. So that all before the encounter with Gilbert. But actually, you were saying a minute ago, Evan, that he wrote, or attempted to write, I think, wrote a comic opera before Gilbert, too.
Well, this was something that happened on a street corner. He was actually invited to a house party, and why don't we compose something that we can play at the house party? This is one of these London things that started at midnight. And so this was a fellow by the name of Bernand, and they wrote Cox and Box, and it was based on an existing story, Box and Cox. They turned it around, and it was maybe an hour or so long. And it's survived to this day. We performed it last year in a somewhat reduced version. But that was Sullivan's first foray into the world of comic light opera.
And that was before Gilbert.
That was before Gilbert.
And it is the only opera, light, heavy, or in between, that has a lullaby about bacon.
Yes. I'd like to know if anybody knows of another lullaby to bacon in the musical world.
I think they've got the lock on it. I doubt if there will be another one anytime soon anyway. Well, then we can actually hear that because we have some Madison Savoyards CDs here from previous performances, and this one from Cox and Box with Hushed is the Bacon features whom as the singer?
That was James Schaffner, who was our tenor last year.
Well, there you have it, in case you've never heard one. That's a lullaby to bacon from Cox and Box.
And the tenor was Jamie Schaffner.
Right.
Did that particular musical take off, or really was it later that when Sullivan linked up with Gilbert that things...
Well, D'Oyly Carte brought it back as a companion piece. Sometimes it's played with Sorcerer, sometimes with some of those other pieces that Sullivan wrote with other writers. So it's been around, and it's amazing that something that started out as a house party thing is actually still performed.
Yeah, something was in the air that night. Well, one of their better-known ones, let's say, and when I say they, in this case we're talking about Gilbert and Sullivan, William Schwenk Gilbert. I'm not sure how much serious poetry he wrote before getting together with Sullivan. I suspect he was on the light side for
the Bab Ballads.
Much of what he did.
Right. Yeah. Some of those were resurrected for parts of the Gilbert and Sullivan operas.
Well, here we have from Patience, then.
Sad is that woman's lot, is what we'll hear.
And who is that woman?
That woman is Lady Jane, and she's played by Kathleen Butita, who is our Catashaw this year in the Mikado.
Well, it's sad in title, and some of the singing is rather sad, but something's happening there. Something's going on in that performance of Patience.
Sad is that woman's lot. That was sung by Kathleen Butita. She'll be returning in your cast for this production. She is in the cast for the Mikado that's currently ongoing.
As Catashaw, yes.
And doing a wonderfully... musical and dramatic job with the role too.
Great.
How much of the what goes on stage is actually planned? I mean,
well, if you notice, there was this huge laugh. In fact, two huge laughs during this song, which only occurred on this performance. It was one of these disasters that was turned into a wonderful comic moment. She was kind of cueing or pretending to play a bass. It was normally a cello, but just to make it big and visual, it was a bass. And so she was doing this big motion with the strings in the orchestra. Well, one of those, she did her motion, and there was no sound. It was cute. So that was the first big laugh. And then after the expression that she gave... And then the next one occurred together. She had this big smile and nod, and the audience reacted to that. So she took this and made it a wonderful comic moment.
A natural actor.
Yes. Well, that's one of the joys of being there, isn't it? Especially for being there for the live performance and being part of the spontaneity.
Indeed. And we've got that on our... We issued a DVD of that performance, left that so-called mistake in, but then as one of the extras show from another night what it was supposed to be for contrast.
In the director's cut or...
Exactly.
That's right. The wonderful world of DVDs. We're talking about Gilbert and Sullivan for the next few minutes of the midday with Evan Richards and Christopher Ocasek, who are involved in the current Madison Savoyard's production of The Mikado, one of the big hits for
That's
Gilbert
right.
and Sullivan.
In fact, there'll be a performance the next three nights, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evenings, and then a matinee on Sunday.
That's right.
Quiz question comes your way in about 10 minutes between now and then. More from Gilbert and Sullivan. Kind of an odd couple in a way, I guess, because you do have a composer who's up to this point taken himself seriously, and I guess a poet/librettist who got pretty far out there sometimes for Sullivan's taste.
That's right, and Sullivan always had this feeling that he was doing something that was beneath him, and that led to many, many tensions. He thought that the music was subservient to the words. And in fact, the Mikado almost didn't happen. They had come to a big row and exchanged letters that got more and more heated and ended up with, well, it's clear that this cannot go on, but my goodness, the money was so good.
It's the most performed of all of the operettas, all the works of the two of them.
Indeed. It's been a big hit ever since it was premiered. In fact, the year it started to be played in the U.S., there was one night somebody counted 170 performances going on in the United States on one night.
Mind you, all of these were not legal performances. Many of these were pirated performances. It was that popular. So,
whence cometh the title Pirates of Penzance, according to the story.
Now, speaking of that, Christopher, you mentioned that you've really gone back into the score and almost created an autograph score, one of the original, what you think is the original intent of Sullivan in the music.
Yes. And hours and hours of work to research. And one thing music conductors, music directors try to do is we try to stay true to a score and try to really bring out the composer's intent. So in looking through these E.F. Kelmis parts, which is the publisher for the orchestra parts, it was very apparent that these were incredibly old parts, and researching the autograph score, the first edition of things, letters and notes from Sullivan, looking at first performances, edited editions and things, it's very apparent that many of the things that are in the current parts are just flat out wrong, and sometimes they're just mistakes that have never been quite corrected by the publisher. So hours and hours and hours later, we have parts that match what we believe to be the most consistent and the closest intent to what Sullivan was going for. So it's very nice. It's got an extra polish to it, and for those Gilbert and Sullivan aficionados, I think it's something that they can certainly appreciate. And I rest better at night knowing that we're doing as close to what Sullivan...
carrying out the original intent.
I've been around the Mikado forever. I grew up with it. My dad had old 78s that he played before I could even walk. And I'm hearing things in it that I've not heard before. And it is beautiful.
Sounds like it'll be an interesting performance.
Yes.
Maybe next year we'll actually have recordings of that we can play.
Absolutely. That's the plan. We are recording this, and we'll plan to issue a DVD and CDs.
In the meantime, have patience, which is to say we have patience. And we have another, do you call them arias, if it's Gilbert and Sullivan?
Oh, my goodness.
Sure. I think there's a number of people that call them arias. Some people call it song. It goes back to that definition. Is it opera? Is it operetta? Is it
tomato, tomato?
Exactly.
It's a lovely melody, nonetheless.
It's lovely, nonetheless, yes.
And this one is called When I First Put This Uniform On. It's a short one. And what's going on with this?
Well, this is Colonel Calvary, is it, who's coming in and explaining why he loves to wear this uniform, and I think it has some resonance today, actually. And this is kind of how it affects the fair sex, what the response would be to the uniform.
When I first put this uniform on, I said as I looked in the glass, it's one to a big in any simpy, my favorite form is a pass. Good lace has a charm for the fair, and I plenty of that to despair. What a love to profession, and much an impression to I have it everywhere. A fact that I counted upon when I first put this uniform on.
I said all the words and as I know that I have not.
Well, it does have an effect. It reminds me of a Stephen Foster song, If You Only Have a Mustache, you know. The girls will go for that.
That was Robert Kovac singing When I First Put This Uniform On from Patience.
And we'll hear a bit of The Sorcerer, too, where does that fit into the chronology of Gilbert and Sullivan?
Well, that was the first full-length production with Doily Cart. It was something that they wanted to do after the great success of Trial by Jury, which is 40 minutes, and D'Oyly Carte wanted something to be performed with La Pericole to make a complete evening. And he was one of these that wanted an English opera, and he was not happy having to play French operas for the English public. So he had great success. In fact, Trial by Jury got to be the attraction and not La Pericole, and they said, gee, this is working well. Let's start an opera company. And it was called the Comedy Opera Company, and this is where Gilbert and Sullivan made some big demands. They had to have full control over the casting, the rehearsals. This was a different way to do business, and that laid the foundation for the rest of the D'Oyly Carte, Gilbert and Sullivan operas. The cast that they hired for The Sorcerer tended to be the cast that they used throughout.
And they had some quality control then.
So yes, they did.
Yes. We're going to hear from
The Sorcerer.
The Sorcerer.
Right you are. And this is a piece about Constance.
Constance, my daughter. Alona Pinsky is singing this one.
Patience.
That was Constance, my daughter.
Gilbert and Sullivan, yes.
Ilona Pinsky, the singer.
And our guests this half hour have been from the Madison Savoyards production of Mikado, well, actually Savoyards in general, in some cases, for a number of years, but this time out it's the Mikado.
It's their sixth production of Mikado. Terry Kiss-Frank is returning as stage director, and it sounds like it's going to be visually just as interesting as it is musically.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Terry is a wonderful director who's very conscious of the underlining stories as well as the overarching story. She's set this production in a very visually stunning, well-lit, well-set atmosphere. It takes place in the middle of Titipu, which is the town in the Mikado, and everything takes place at a meeting place, which is in a shrine in the middle that's only reachable by bridge or by boat or by boardwalk, and it really sets up society, and you see the different layers of society. So everybody is not just a high-class noble. There's different levels of society, from peasants to geishas to shrine maidens, and that provides a very visually stunning setting as well. And then put that together with all the fun music and the careful attention that's been paid to the words and things, and you've got a wonderful Gilbert and Sullivan production.
A little social commentary and some lovely fun music as well.
Well, thanks for being with us this day and enlightening us a bit about Gilbert and Sullivan and keying us into the Mikado this time around for Madison.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
For information about the production, you can call 608-262-2201 or visit the website, which is madisonsavoyards.org.